Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Well, hello, everybody. Nice to welcome back. Guess what? This is not Jim. I'm Doug Llewellyn, and that's okay. We a little screw up in the engineering division, but that's okay. I'm Doug Llewellyn, and it's nice to be back here with you on these microphones. We are more than happy to be welcoming back today and continuing our series with Lindy Brewster. She's a noted psychologist and leadership development consultant. She is the founding partner of OR Consulting, which is a management consulting firm with its headquarters located in Northern Virginia near Washington. Lindy, by the way, is honored to be one of the women highlighted in our Women Making a Difference in America series. So it's a real pleasure to have her back again. So, you know, I've talked to Lindy. We've talked to her many times, but I have never gotten a really official explanation of the history of her amazing company and what she's doing. She's the founding partner, as I said, of OR Consulting. But what's interesting is this firm actually had its beginnings in the United Kingdom. And let's welcome Lindy with us now. She's from her headquarters in Manassas, Virginia. Lindy, welcome. How are you? Nice to have you back again.
I'm really good, Jim. How are you? It's nice to be talking with you again. Sorry, Jim. How I'm doing as well.
I'm Doug. We'll get it straightened out, okay? It doesn't matter. I could be Charles, could be Harry. It's okay, as long as we get this show out and get your story told. Tell us a little bit about the story of OR Consulting. I've really never asked you to give us a background on it. How do you describe it? It's pretty interesting.
So it was founded nearly 30 years ago now. The original, and it's still called in the UK, Organization Resource. And it was founded by a couple of clinical psychologists who had gotten interested in leadership and had been specializing in something called transactional analysis, which is an old and well-researched psychological theory. And they started to think about how that could be applied to leaders in a corporate environment to help them work more effectively, and more particularly to apply that to leadership development programs. So the first thrust of the company was very much around leadership development programs, which at the time meant having contracts with companies where they would want to train up people to be future leaders. And the company would take them through workshops that would cover things like transactional analysis. And transactional analysis is one of these interesting theories that actually a lot of the words have crept into our normal conversational way of talking with each other. So the phrase, I'm okay, you're okay, comes from transactional analysis. And actually it's not a simple concept at all. It's very much to do with how we think about ourselves, whether we're grounded in ourselves or whether we're not, whether we see ourselves as somebody who is lesser than others or greater than others and therefore prone to be more aggressive. And so using those concepts, it helps people to think about what a good leader looked like from the point of view of being assertive, but also being empathetic with people, being able to engage in critical thinking and knowing when it was time to back off that with people because they needed something else, they needed listening to. So it was about some basic leadership skills. The programs also used to talk through managing change, a concept of transition, how transition is what we experience in our heads when we're going through change and how we can more effectively manage ourselves through that. And then a look at how our physiology can override our effectiveness because we're preconditioned to be in survival mode. It's very easy to get into survival mode, and that'll override our ability to think and lead appropriately. So that's where it started nearly 30 years ago. I joined company when it was around about 6 years old, and I joined in the UK, and my first experiences were doing leadership development programs. But I very quickly became involved in bringing those programs, and then the teamwork that we had started to do as part of that to the US. And so over the last 20 plus years, I've been involved in work in the US. Originally, I commuted backwards and forwards, and then we got a long-term contract for a leadership development program, a significant contract in the government contracting space. And they had been working with us. I'd been doing teamwork with them, as well as some leadership development programs. But with this contract, they wanted a team that was US-based because of the sensitive nature of some of the work they did. However, they agreed that one person from our company could come and set up the company in the US and run it and bring together the team. And because of where our family were in terms of age, and so our youngest was about to go into high school and our others were either in college or through college. I've got four children. We've got four children in total. They're no longer children. And okay. I volunteered to come. And it kind of fitted well with my husband's career. So we incorporated the business in 2001, and we incorporated in Northern Virginia because the government contractor we were working with sits in the Washington metropolitan area. And over the years, what's been interesting about the trajectory of the company is that although leadership development programs have always played a significant part in what we do, over the years, there's been a growing request for us to do teamwork in a more flexible way. Some of that will be teamwork that actually looks somewhat more like a leadership development program because it's about culture change and involves large numbers, as leadership development programs do. However, there isn't at the start a framework that we kind of take off the shelf and say, here are some of the things we're going to do. What we do is we design for the company and with the company what's important for them and deliver that. And we have built over the years on the basis of transactional analysis. We now use many different theoretical backgrounds. I got interested in early 2000s in the idea of how psychology can be integrated from many different theories, and they tend to all back up similar things, but put slightly different lights on it. And that interest came from work that was done by somebody called Ken Wilber, who is very well known as somebody who integrates theories and sees really a very different picture. And that's what started me becoming interested in the mindsets that we've talked about. The mindsets very much relate to the whole idea of integrated theory. And I've used those more and more frequently over the years because people find it very helpful to understand how their thinking affects their behavior and then how their behavior affects others. So it's not directly related at all to transaction analysis. It's a different way of looking at the world. However, we still use some transactional analysis. We use some other theories that look very similar to transaction analysis. And as time went on, I also became involved in, very interested in, neuropsychology and how that comes into play and interrupts our ability to function at an integrated level as a leader, to really lead, how it'll pull us back to being autocratic or to being bureaucratic because we have control over things, so it feels more like we're surviving. And the mindsets and the neurology for me link very closely. So that's how the company has grown over the years. And as I say, although we now still do leadership development programs, we are much more involved in delivering designed team interventions, either for specific teams or for culture change purposes, and linking that to executive coaching as well. So that's been the trajectory over the years.
It sounds fascinating. Give me an example of an assignment that you would have. And I know you mentioned you work with the government. Do you work with, obviously, different branches of the government? The government, obviously, is very big. There are a lot of different areas of the government. So, and is that still one of the primary areas of your, you know, your client-based government? Is it government-based, or have you branched out a lot into the private sector as well here in the U.S.? How about that?
So, over the years, I've worked with some government departments. I am currently working with, it's kind of interesting, it's a company that is actually traded on Wall Street, but actually came out of the Department of Agriculture, and they do lending for farms and farmers and ranches. They are kind of an equivalent of a Fannie Mae or a Freddie Mac, but for farmers. And they operate as a separate company, as I say, traded on the stock exchange. However, they have government oversight for what they do, and they certainly have congressional oversight for what they do. So that's been interesting. In the past, I've worked with different elements, particularly of the Department of Defense, and the one example of working, it was kind of like a co-employment between the Department of State and a government contractor when I went out to Afghanistan and Iraq back in 2009-2010. So a lot of my other work has been through government contractors. And the answer to the commercial bit is yes, over the years we have had much more engagement with other commercial-based companies, such as there's a very big pharmaceutical company we worked with. We worked with the Ford Motor Company, particularly with Jaguar Land Rover in the early 2000s. I'm involved with some private equity companies, helping them think through what they do in terms of their leadership development. So there's a range of different things. That said, over the years, I tend to have specialized in the government contracting area. And that covers a huge scope of things. I mean, we talk about government contracting. Actually, a lot of government is delivered by government contractors. They don't necessarily employ people directly. So the people that you might come across that you're working with in, say, defense or the tax department or wherever, they may well be employees of a government contractor. So they deliver a whole range of work. And the truth is that for those people sitting in the government, their first loyalty is always to the government. So that's the kind of range of things that I do, the kind of companies I work with.
It's an amazing story. And, you know, you are described as business psychologists. And I'm just wondering, your psychology training, were you a trained psychologist, by the way, when you joined this firm in England years ago?
Yes.
Or did that come later?
Yeah,
you were.
Years ago. I trained as a clinical psychologist, and I worked with people with learning disabilities, very severe learning disabilities. I actually specialized working with people with autism and Asperger's syndrome. And I did that for 10 years, and I went from the new entrant to being a consultant psychologist, and then transitioned into management. And the transition into management was not planned at all. It was kind of fortuitous. And the way it happened was that at the time, and this was the case here as well as in the UK, in the 80s, there was this huge move of getting people out of the big institutional hospitals that had cared for people like this into the community, because they were starting to see that actually people did a lot better if they were looked after in the community. And what the health services in the UK recognized was that actually psychology had a lot to contribute in terms of how to best manage the transition of people from hospital into the community, and we're looking for psychologists to move into management. And as a consultant psychologist, I already had a seat at the table talking about that, and an opportunity came up for me to actually lead the services for people with learning disability in the part of the health service where I was working. Originally, it was a temporary assignment, and I moved from that into other community management assignments as a general manager. And I kind of got interested in it, and that's when I started doing research, management training and management research. So it was never planned. A lot of my career has never been particularly planned.
I was going to say you're in an area of psychology using psychological training that I know you never really thought you would be doing this in the beginning when you got into this at all. But with that that knowledge about your background in psychology, that really is one of the things that your firm brings to the table that others can't, and that's your psychology training. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the studies you have been making about the neurological makeup and how it affects leadership. There is something to that, right? And you've really delved into this. Talk to me about it a little bit. It's very interesting.
So it links back to the whole survival instinct. And a lot of the time in organizations, particularly I think as the amount of technology has allowed people to communicate so rapidly and quickly with each other, and the growing competition that there is in between companies, largely because of that flow of information and globalization, there's a lot of pressure on leaders all the time, constantly. And the interest in neurology is that unless we are very cognizant of that, very self-aware of that, what starts to happen is that our bodies go into fight-flight mode because we're seeing threats the whole time. And the consequence of that is that we often show up not as effectively as we might. So actually, we often think that we're being effective at the time. And the reason for it is this. When we perceive a threat, adrenaline is released into the body. And, you know, adrenaline feels great. It's a drug that takes us high. And we either go into fight mode, where we'll be making snap decisions and running around and getting people involved. We often create a firefighting culture where everybody's running around focused on the tactical, not actually focused on the strategic. In truth, companies that trade on Wall Street are often pushed into that direction because Wall Street requires constant reporting, so that their sight line is very narrow. It's often no further out than quarterly. That's what they're focused on. They've got to hit the quarterly numbers because that's what will affect the stock price. The impact of that on behavior, and consequently, often the impact of that on the long-term health of their companies is significant because they don't have time to sit down and think strategically. They don't have time to do things like train up new leaders. They don't have time to engage with people. They don't have time to allow people to make mistakes and learn from that. There's a constant pressure just to deliver, and so you get people running around doing the tactical. And as I say, the consequence of that long-term can be significant because there isn't a really long-term strategic plan. One of the reasons that I enjoy working with companies that are owned by private equity is that there is a different requirement. Their requirement is 3 to 5 years out. They have a plan where they would like to get, and they want the companies focused on being the best they can. And yes, they're interested in profit, and yes, they're interested in numbers, but not in the same pressurized way. They're much more intent on the company thinking about how it gets to be where it is in the long term. That, by the way, as the bigger private equity companies, some of the smaller private equity companies are in it for the short term and will go in, cost cut, and flip the company. But the bigger ones are much more interested in the long-term value of the company. That they want a company after 5 years that is much more valuable than the company they bought, and they know that the only way that you get there is to think strategically. So that taking that pressure off enables people from a neurological perspective to step out of fight flight. Now, the where fight flight sits in the brain is in the back of the brain, in the area that we might term subconscious. We know that we feel emotional about things. We know that we're reacting. However, we don't often really, we don't often put words to that. And the whole push about from emotional intelligence and being self-aware is to become self-aware of when we find ourselves in that mode and then to do something about it. And the doing something about it is, first of all, fairly simple. We learned this, and we have for centuries learned it, from our grandparents or our teachers or our parents, that when you find yourself going into a fight or flight, what do we do? Well, you take and stop. You stop and take a breath. And the reason that you breathe is it disrupts the physiology so that you can get into the part of the brain where you can think things through. Research is showing that one breath isn't enough. You need a lot more breaths than one breath. We can also disrupt it by counting to 10. We used to be told, count to 10. Again, there's been some recent research that showed it's not just 10. You need to count to maybe 100, maybe 1,000, or count backwards. And that forces us into the part of the brain where we can start to think. The other interesting part of managing ourselves, once we become self-aware of getting into fight and flight, is to actually name what that's about. And what are you doing when you name it? So, you know, what am I reacting to? Well, I'm feeling afraid of maybe losing my job. I'm feeling angry and frustrated with these people in front of me that are not doing as I'm asking them to do. A whole bunch of feelings we'll have in place. I often use the word feeling to distinguish the consciousness of emotion from emotion, which is driving behavior, but is basically back of the brain, for want of a better word, subconscious. And the way that that happens is that when we start to name what we're feeling, when we've paused, we've done the deep breathing, we've counted to 10, and we now can name it, we actually find ourselves in what's called the executive area of the brain, which is at the front of the brain. And once there, it's far, far easier to get into the kind of thinking and behaviors that are the good leadership behaviors. So the higher orders of the brain, neocortex, is where we do our critical thinking, our problem solving, being logical, actually being empathetic to other people. And there's something that recently has been named as the affect triangle, which says actually we obviously need that emotion that is unconscious, because it often alerts us to things that might be disruptive for us. However, if you can enact the triangle, the affect triangle, by becoming conscious of it, you then start to manage it. So you name what the feelings are about, you then start to do the thinking. And from the thinking, you can actually interrogate. So what is that emotion fundamentally about? What is it that I need to do? Is there something here that is a real problem that I'm reacting to? And I need to think about how I deal with it. So for me, that's what's very interesting. And becoming self-aware is not an easy thing to do. It requires a lot of practice. But as you practice, you lay down new neural pathways. So you will see the best leaders have done that practice over time. And when there's a problem, they will default to that kind of mind mapping, though they're not thinking of it necessarily in those terms, that enables them to behave as a very good leader.
That's really amazing. I was going to ask you if self-awareness and self-management are important to leading others. I gather they must. They really are, aren't they? Self-awareness and self-management.
They're very important to leading others, because unless you're self-aware, you can't manage how you show up with people. And unless you're managing how you show up with people as a leader, you're not going to be leading. And the other thing that is very important for us to recognize in terms of the neurology is we are social beings. Part of our survival is about being part of a group. We are social beings that live in groups. and we take our cues from other people. So part of our survival response is, if you and I were in a room together and I screaming and running out the room, you would run out the room after me before you'd even thought about it. Our behavior
That's
affects
right.
other
You're
people's
right.
behavior.
and
it's for survival reasons. However, it isn't always appropriate for us to do that in the workplace. So if I'm a leader, say, who is somebody that's not very self-aware and I default to yelling at people, then there are two ways people have to go. Either they're going to yell back at me and we're going to get into a fight, or they're going to go into flight mode and stop contributing. And you see a lot of companies hurt by that kind of behavior where, there's a crisis brewing. The leader starts yelling at people. People don't speak. And over time, they learn, actually, if we've got a problem, we're not even going to raise it. Let's try and fix it. And, of course, a lot of problems never get better with time. And then there's a big surprise, and then there's a big crisis, and everybody's running around with their hair on fire trying to fix the crisis. And it comes from a survival response, which is, I better not raise this, because if I raise it, I'm going to get killed. So I'm going to keep it quiet and hope it'll go away, or I'll try and work it and see if we can fix it. So that interrelationship of behavior, the social aspect of it, is also absolutely important. And leaders better be aware of how they're impacting other people and how other people impact them. Because I know leaders, when they start to practice this, often find it's very difficult to hold the self-management piece because they get to a place where they get pulled back into whatever default mode they started from. So if I've decided I know that my people aren't speaking to me, but I'm going to go in front of them and say, look, we're going to start working differently. I realize that I've been behaving in this way and it's not conducive to us having good conversations. And what I'd like to do is engage you in some thinking about, say, next steps in the strategy. And we pull together a meeting and everybody in the room stays quiet. After a bit, I can start to get irritated. And if I'm not careful, that irritation will pull me back into fight mode. Leaders also, by the way, can find themselves in flight mode. So we all know leaders who find it very difficult to confront poor performance. They will ignore it, or they'll back off it, or they'll make jokes about it, and they're not dealing with the important things in front of them.
Well, you are just a fountain of information on this whole subject that involves psychology. We've gone through the half hour, Lindy. It's so fascinating talking to you. And I am sure that the clients you work with come away being amazed by what you have to tell them after you've had a chance to work with them and get to know and analyze them. There are just so many aspects of your firm that are so great. I wish we had more time. But, we've been doing this special series with Lindy Brewster of OR Consulting. The firm is headquartered in Manassas, Virginia. By the way, Lindy's firm has a great website, and I think you ought to consult with the firm website if you want to learn more about the firm. It really is amazing. It's orconsulting.us.com. orconsulting.us.com. Lindy, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for your information. I love chatting with you, and it's just amazing to learn what you're doing. I know you love it. It's fascinating work, isn't it?
It is. It's really interesting. And thank you very much, Doug. Thank you for asking me the questions that have let me talk about it. As you can hear, well, I enjoy it, and I hope other people get a lot from it as they listen to it.
I think everybody gets something from it. I know I have, and I know the audience has as well. So Lindy Brewster of OR Consulting, thank you so much. It's been great.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.
That's it for today, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. See you next time right here on Close Up Talk Radio. Bye for now.